Episode 6, Enter Van Helsing. It has been many weeks since Miss Mina has had word of Jonathan Harker. During this time, Count Dracula has made his way to England and to his foul lair at the Carfax estate. Beside Carfax is the insane asylum directed by Dr. Seward. At the asylum, the patient Renfield is a captive of Dracula's mysterious powers. As our story continues, Miss Mina receives word of Jonathan from a hospital in distant Budapest.
Letter from Sister Agatha, Missionary Hospital of St. Joseph and St. Mary, Budapest, to Miss Wilhelmina Murray.
12 August. Dear Madam, I write by desire of Mr. Jonathan Harker, who is himself not strong enough to write. He has been under our care for nearly 6 weeks, suffering from a violent brain fever. He wishes me to convey his love and to say that all of his work is completed. He has had some fearful shock, so says our doctor, and in his delirium his ravings have been dreadful, of wolves and poison and blood, of ghosts and demons. Be careful with him always, that there may be nothing to excite him of this kind for a long time to come. The traces of such an illness as his do not lightly die away. We should have written long ago, but we knew nothing of his friends, and there was on him no papers or information of any kind. Be assured that he is well cared for. He has won all hearts by his sweetness and gentleness. He is getting on well, and I have no doubt will, in a few weeks, be all himself. Yours, with sympathy and all blessings, Sister Agatha.
Letter from Mina Harker to Lucy Westenray.
My dearest Lucy, I write this as we return to you. I know you will be anxious to hear all that has happened since we parted at the railway station at Whitby. Well, my dear, I got to Hull all right and caught the boat to Hamburg and from there to Budapest. At the hospital, Sister Agatha brought me to Jonathan. I found my dear one, oh, so thin and pale and weak-looking. All the resolution had gone out of his dear eyes, and that quiet dignity which I told you was in his face had vanished. He is only a wreck of himself, and he does not remember anything that has happened to him for a long time past. At least, he wants me to believe so, and I shall never ask. When he woke, he did not seem surprised to see me, but simply asked for his coat, and from this took his notebook. As he glanced at the pages, I could see him tremble. After a while, he called me near, raised the book, and said, "The secret is here." I asked him what he meant, but he simply buried his head in his hands and said nothing. After a moment, he fell back, exhausted. I put the book under his pillow and kissed him. The next day, Jonathan awoke somewhat rested and smiling. Then, to my surprise, he insisted that we be married at once. I sat in amazement as he called for the hospital chaplain, declaring that we wished to be married within the hour. This journey has brought great sorrow and great joy. Goodbye for now, my dear Lucy. I shall post this at once, and perhaps write very soon again. Your ever-loving, Mina Harker.
Dr. Seward's Diary.
20 August. The case of Renfield grows even more interesting. Earlier this evening, the attendant came to tell me that Renfield was acting a bit strange, so I went down at once to have a look at him. He was still in the straight waistcoat and in the padded room, but the suffused look had gone from his face, and his eyes had something of their old pleading, I might almost say, cringing softness. I was satisfied with his present condition and directed him to be released from the straitjacket. The attendants hesitated, and Renfield had humor enough to see their distrust, for coming close to me, he said in a whisper, all the while looking furtively at them.
They think I could hurt you. Fancy me hurting you, the fools. You and I, we have mutual interests, eh, Doctor?
I miss your meaning, Mr. Renfield.
Yes. Well, you would, wouldn't you?
I do not know that we have much in common. Perhaps you would be so kind as to enlighten me.
I do not wish to speak of it tonight. I have other interests to attend to.
Very well. Speaking of your other interests, a stray tomcat seems to have adopted the asylum as his new home. I thought perhaps you might like to keep him as a pet.
For me?
That is correct.
You mock me, Doctor. I don't take any stock in cats. I have more to think of now, and I can wait. I can wait.
After a while, I left him. The attendant tells me that he was quiet until just before dawn, and that he began to get uneasy, and at length violent, until at last he fell into a paroxysm which exhausted him so that he swooned into a sort of coma. 3 nights as the same thing happened. Violent all day, then quiet from moonrise to sunrise. I wish I could get some clue to the cause. It would almost seem as if there were some influence which came and went. Ah, a plan. We shall tonight play sane wits against mad ones. He escaped before without our help. Tonight he shall escape with it. We shall give him a chance and have the men ready to follow in case they are required. The unexpected always happens. How well Disraeli knew life. Our bird, when he found the cage open, would not fly. So all our subtle arrangements were for naught. But then, the moment we had rested our guard, he once again made his escape to the grounds of the deserted house at Carfax, and we found him in the same place, pressed against the old chapel door.
Yes, Master, yes. I understand. Yes, of course, of course.
Renfield!
Get away, you fool! Don't you see there is work to be done? The master is at hand. We have no use for you. You are less than the fly.
Get away from that door and go with these men back to your cell.
Ha! You, them. This is not the asylum, Doctor. You are not the master here. Yes. Yes. My dear doctor, you must forgive me. I've been acting like a madman. Gentlemen, good evening. You needn't tie me. I shall go quietly.
Letter. Arthur Holmwood to Dr. John Seward.
John, I want you to do me a favor. Lucy is ill. That is, she has no special disease, but she looks awful and is getting worse every day. I am sure that there is something preying on my dear girl's mind. I am almost distracted when I think of her. I told her I should ask you to see her, and though she demurred at first, she finally consented. You are to attend lunch at the Westonreigh home tomorrow, 2:00. So as not to arouse any suspicion in Mrs. Westonreigh, and after lunch, Lucy will take an opportunity of being alone with you. I shall come in for tea, and we can go away together. I am filled with anxiety and want to consult with you alone as soon as I can after you have seen her. Do not fail, Arthur.
Arthur?
Oh, John, you've spoken with her. You've examined her.
Please, Arthur, calm yourself. Yes, I've just now left her.
And?
In my opinion, there is no functional disturbance or any malady that I know of. At the same time, I am not by any means satisfied with her appearance. She is woefully different from what she was when I saw her last. Of course, you must bear in mind that I did not have full opportunity of examination, such as I should wish. We went into her boudoir, and as soon as the door was closed, the mask fell from her face, and she sank down into a chair with a great sigh and hid her eyes with her hand.
Oh, John, I loathe talking about myself.
You see, I am your friend, but I am also a doctor, and a doctor's confidence is sacred.
I cannot breathe.
Cannot breathe?
It feels as if hands are gripping my throat. I cannot rest.
But your mother comments that you fall into a deep sleep from which you will not be roused.
Yes, but I do not rest. I have terrible dreams which frighten me, and yet I cannot remember them in the least.
John, this is terrible. You must help her.
I shall write to my old friend and master, Professor Van Helsing of Amsterdam, who knows as much about obscure diseases as anyone in the world. I will ask him to come over and will mention to him who you are and your relations to Miss Westendray. Van Helsing is a seemingly arbitrary man, but this is because he knows what he is talking about better than anyone else. He is a philosopher and a metaphysician, and he has, I believe, an absolutely open mind. This, with an iron nerve, a temper of the ice brook, an indomitable resolution, self-command, and toleration exalted from virtues to blessings, and the kindliest and truest heart that beats. I have great confidence in him. I shall ask him to come at once.
Yes, sir?
I'm Van Helsing. Dr. Van Helsing. I have come from Amsterdam. Tonight, I will stay in this place. You, young man, will be so kind as to provide me with your finest room immediately. Your staff shall draw the hot bath, a very hot bath, immediately. Your service shall bring me dinner, roasted beef, potatoes, and a salad of green vegetables. In 1 hour, you will have a cab waiting for me to take me to the Westonry home in Hillingham. Do you understand?
Van Helsing, doctor, Amsterdam, room, bath, dinner, cab. Will there be anything else, sir?
I like you.
Yes, sir.
You may acquire for me 2 of your finest Cuban cigars.
Yes, sir.
1 for me, 1 for you.
Why, thank you, sir.
Hello, John.
Dr. Van Helsing, how good to see you.
And you as well, my friend. Come, take us out of this night air and tell me why I am here.
Well, really, there's nothing more to report beyond what I've already said in my letter. I must say, I'm baffled.
Do not be confused, my friend. Keep your mind sharp. And your eyes open, for your Miss Lucy is in grave danger.
Grave danger? Surely you jest.
This is no jest, but life and death. Perhaps more.
What do you mean by that?
Later, we shall compare notes. Now, take me to Miss Lucy.
Lucy, this is Dr. Van Helsing.
Hello, Doctor.
Miss Lucy.
I fear that I am wasting the time of so great a man.
Lucy, don't say such things.
My dear young miss, I have the so great pleasure to visit with you because you are so much beloved. They told me you were down in the spirit and that you were of a ghastly pale. But you and I shall show them how wrong they are. How can John Seward know anything of young ladies? He has his madmans to play with and to bring them back to happiness and to those that love them. But the young ladies, he has no wife nor daughter, and the young do not tell themselves to the young, but rather to the old like me, who have known so many sorrows and the causes of them. So, my dear, we will send him away to the garden, whilst you and I have a little talk all to ourselves.
Have you formed an opinion?
I have made careful examination, but there is no functional cause. With you, I agree that there has been much blood lost. It has been, but also is not. I have asked her to send me her maid that I may ask just one or two questions. I know well what she will say. And yet, there is cause. There is always cause for everything. I must go back home and think.
Very well.
Let us go. I will rest at the hotel. Tomorrow I shall return to Amsterdam. It is there I keep the ancient texts and documents which I need study. In my mind, a theory it forms.
And?
And brings terror to my heart. What do you make of the marks upon her throat?
Marks? Upon her throat?
Just over the external jugular vein, there are two punctures. Not large, but they are there. There is no sign of disease, but the edges are white and worn-looking, as if by some regular activity.
It might be the means of the manifest loss of blood. But such a thing could not be. The whole bed would be drenched to a scarlet with the blood which the girl has lost.
Well?
Well, I can make nothing of it.
Someday, you will look beyond your so sacred science, friend John. I must go. Come.
Shall I have a nurse?
We are the best nurses, you and I. You keep watch all night. See that she is well fed and that nothing disturbs her. You must not sleep all the night. Later on, we can sleep. I shall be back as soon as possible. And then we may begin.
May begin? What on earth do you mean?
We shall see.
It was a tiresome task. My days were spent at the asylum amongst the castaways of human society, and now my nights were spent sitting in watch over poor Lucy. I must have been dozing, for I hadn't heard his footsteps, but I was conscious of the professor's hand on my shoulder.
And how is our patient?
Well, when I left her, she was fine.
Come, let us see.
Together we went into the room. The blind was down, and I went over to raise it gently, whilst Van Helsing stepped with his soft cat-like tread over to the bed.
God in Himmel!
He raised his hand and pointed to the bed, and his iron face was drawn and ashen white. I felt my knees begin to tremble. There on the bed, seemingly in a swoon, lay poor Lucy, more horribly white and wan-looking than ever. Even the lips were white, and the gums seemed to have shrunken back from the teeth. Van Helsing raised his foot to stamp in anger, but the instinct of his life and all the long years of habit stood to him, and he put it down again softly.
Quick, bring the brandy.
I flew to the dining room and returned with the decanter. He wetted the poor white lips. He felt her heart, and after a few moments of agonizing suspense, said,
"It is not too late. It beats, though but feebly. We must be quick."
As he spoke, he was dipping into his bag and producing the instruments for transfusion. I had taken off my coat and rolled up my shirt sleeve. Without a moment's delay, we began the operation.
Do not stir. I fear that with growing strength, she may wake. And that would make danger. Oh, so much danger. But I shall precaution take. I shall give a hypodermic injection of morphia.
He proceeded then, swiftly and deftly, to carry out his intent. The effect on Lucy was not bad, for the faint seemed to merge subtly into the narcotic sleep. It was with a feeling of personal pride that I could see a faint tinge of color steal back into the pallid cheeks and lips. Lucy slept well into the day, and when she woke, she was fairly well and strong, though not nearly so much as the day before. When Van Helsing had seen her, he went out for a walk, leaving me in charge, with strict injunctions that I was not to leave her for a moment. I could hear his voice in the hall, asking the way to the nearest telegraph office. Van Helsing returned in a couple of hours, and presently said to me,
"Now you go home. I stay here tonight, and I shall sit up with little Miss myself. You and I must watch the case, and she must have none other to know."
The next afternoon, I went over to Hillingham and found Van Helsing in excellent spirits, and Lucy much better. Shortly after I had arrived, a big parcel from abroad came for the professor. He opened it with much impressment, assumed, of course, and showed a great bundle of white flowers.
"These are for you, Miss Lucy."
"For me? Oh, Dr. Van Helsing."
"Yes, my dear, but not for you to play with. These are medicines. See, I put him in your window. I make pretty wreath and hang him round your neck so that you sleep well. Oh, yes. They, like the lotus flower, make your trouble forgotten."
"Oh, Professor, I believe you're only putting up a joke on me. Why, these flowers are only common garlic."
"No trifling with me. I never jest. There is grim purpose in all I do, and I warn you, do not thwart me. Take care, for the sake of others, if not for your own."
The professor's actions were certainly odd, and not to be found in any pharmacopoeia that I had ever heard of. First, he fastened up the windows and latched them securely. Next, taking a handful of the flowers, he rubbed them all over the sashes, as though to ensure that every whiff of air that might get in would be laden with the garlic smell. Then, with the wisp, he rubbed all over the jamb of the door, above, below, and at each side, and round the fireplace in the same way. It all seemed grotesque to me. And presently he said,
"Yes, I know. You think I should be in your asylum, yes?"
"Professor, I know you always have a reason for what you do, but this certainly puzzles me. It is well we have no skeptic here, or he would say that you are working some spell to keep out an evil spirit."
"Perhaps I am. You see, I make the wreath which Miss Lucy is to wear round her neck."
We then waited whilst Lucy prepared herself for the night, and when she was in bed, Van Helsing came and fixed the wreath of garlic round her neck.
"Take care you do not disturb it. And even if the room feel close, do not tonight open the window or the door."
"I promise. And thank you both for all your kindness to me. Oh, what have I done to be blessed with such friends?"
"Tonight, you may sleep, child."
"Good night, Lucy."
"Good night."
As we left the house in my carriage, Van Helsing said,
"Tonight I can sleep in peace, and sleep I want. Tomorrow in the morning early, you call for me, and we come together to see our pretty miss, so much more strong for my spell which I have worked."
They seemed so confident that I, remembering my own confidence two nights before, and with the baneful result, felt awe and vague terror. It must have been my weakness that made me hesitate to tell it to my friend. But I felt it all the more, like unshed tears.